Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Web Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures from the world of wrestling, entertainment, and general pop culture. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Host on the East Coast, the maniacal minister of the occult,
the Reverend Dan Wilson here, the Emperor of Evil, bringing you another edition of the Midnight Black Mass here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio. You just heard the legendary Alice Cooper with a song in spirit of the holiday that we just surpassed, with the song actually from the Friday the 13th Part 6 soundtrack. That was Man Behind the Mask, parentheses, He's Back, a favorite road trip song for the Devil's Rejects there, and of course about the man himself, Jason Voorhees, and going to be a whole lot more discussion about Mr. Voorhees later tonight on the Muji Movie Minute, as we have a special extended edition of that segment in honor of Friday the 13th. We will be comparing head-to-head the original 1980 Friday the 13th versus the 2009 remake, which was truly the better film. You'll get mine and Moody's in-depth thoughts, and if you want to call in and give a few thoughts of your own, you can do that, because you can call us at 347-324-5735. We're going to be on the air at least until well after 1 a.m., if not longer. You definitely want to join us if you're listening live. I'll be glad to bring you into the conversation when there's a break, if you just hold on tight. But that's what we've got. We've also got another edition of TV Casualty with a very special episode of Batman the Animated Series, Heart of Ice. Talk about that more a little bit later, where you can see me this weekend. Of course, if you want to catch the Rev, you're listening live, you're probably a fan. You say, where can I see you in person, Rev? You can see me tomorrow night, 8 o'clock p.m. bell time in Cornelia, Georgia. Go to nwaanarchy.net for more details. It'll be an international television taping, and I'll be there for the fallout of Hardcore Hell 2012. And let me tell you something, there's going to be a whole hell of a lot of fallout. I'm not going to divulge a whole lot of inside information, but I've gotten wind of some things that have gone on there, and things that cost my man, the Angel of Death, Azrael, his NWA Anarchy Heavyweight Championship that wasn't on the up and up, and it's going to be dealt with tomorrow night as I smite the enemies with the staff of righteousness and let them know the truth. Oh, yes, tomorrow night, NWA Anarchy, Cornelia, Georgia, 8 o'clock p.m. bell time, big international television taping. But that's not all. Next Friday night in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, at Soddy Daisy Middle School, I'll be at NWA Chattanooga. NWA Championship Wrestling from Chattanooga will be emanating also at 8 o'clock p.m. bell time. I'll be there with the Deadly Sin 7, taking on NWA Southern Heavyweight Champion Drew Haskins. And then on Saturday night, April 21st, I will make my long-awaited return to Empire Wrestling. And I got a lot of something to say for a lot of punks have been running their mouths. But that's all going to be handled there tonight. I'm bringing good vibes because I had a good holiday. I had a Friday the 13th that escaped me. No bad luck. But as the Reverend has known over the years, and many of my associates have stated, you got to make your own luck in this world. You can't rely on good luck or bad luck. It's really what you do with it and what you put into it. And I'm all about making myself the best of luck. Sometimes it goes my way and sometimes it don't, but baby, we're riding that wave. You know what I'm saying? On to the music news. Speaking of Alice Cooper, who opened up the show there, nice news to hear that his former guitar player, Ryan Roxy, has returned to the band after a several-year absence. So that's good to hear. He'll be on the upcoming tour where I'll be catching Alice along with Iron Fucking Maiden in the month of June in Atlanta at the Aaron's Amphitheater. You can go to their official website, of course, get all the tour dates wherever you might be listening to the Midnight Black Mass. We love and appreciate all our supporters in Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, all the way over on the West Coast, even some international listeners over in jolly old England and over in the Ukraine and Russia area. We greatly appreciate you listening to the show, and we appreciate your feedback. Ronnie Montrose, we reported of his untimely passing a few weeks ago here on the Midnight Black Mass, and we've now just been informed officially through the Metal News wires that Ronnie's death was ruled a suicide via self-inflicted gunshot wound. Unfortunate. I mean, I know the man had a long battle with Parkinson's that he dealt with, and just unfortunate that he had to take his own life. But I'm not questioning the man's decision. You know, I mean, that's what he felt. It was his life to take. So just rest in peace. All hail to you, Ronnie Montrose. And we'll see you in the spirit realm, my brother. Black Sabbath has announced one U.S. date. They will be headlining Lollapalooza this year. Only U.S. date in 2012 that, quote-unquote, Black Sabbath will be performing now. As of right now, that is a Black Sabbath without Bill Ward, and that controversy is still ongoing. Hopefully, they will get him a deal that's appropriate, and we'll get Bill Ward in there, because it ain't Black Sabbath. Unless you got all four. If you're touting the original lineup, you got to have Bill Ward. Nobody pounded those drums like they owed them money like Bill Ward, one of the most magnificent drummers of all time in hard rock. The band Acid Bath from New Orleans, Louisiana, band that achieved cult status over the years. Members of the band went on to do different things. Frontman Dax Riggs went on to do Dead Man and the Elephant Boy. His own solo project is Dax Riggs. He's done some crossover into the adult country demographic, but just a magnificent voice on the guy. The rest of the band, or the majority of them, ended up forming the black metal band, the only southern black metal band, one of the few around, in Goat Whore. And they achieved a modicum of success, but word has it, at a recent favorite hangout in New Orleans, all the original members of Acid Bath, for the first time in a long time, reunited for drinks. Was that just a happy reunion between friends, or a sign of this legendary band with cult status getting back together? You got to think, with the status they achieved after they broke up from all the demos and the early albums, that they'd probably be able to rake up on a tour more so now than they ever did upon their original run. So I'd love to see Acid Bath back together. We're going to play some of them for you later on, just to hear what you're missing if you've never heard of them. An outstanding band, proudly representing the South, and a very twisted, Black Sabbath, the Alice in Chains, on a whole lot of heroin vibe going on. I think you'll dig it. Marilyn Manson, a legendary shock rocker, has a new album called Born Villain coming out on May the 12th. You're also going to hear the first single off of that track. Axl Rose is in the news again, refusing his Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction for Guns N' Roses. He has officially asked that the nomination be recalled. However, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is still going through with the induction, so Guns N' Roses is still going in. Word is that Slash, Duff, and Izzy, some of them guys probably going to be there, but Axl is not. So, and I got to wonder what his stance is on that, because that hasn't come out real clear. Is it so much that he's got a beef with the other guys in the band that don't want to tease that potential reunion that everybody, he don't want to open the can of worms of the reunion that everybody wants? Or is it because he's just, Axl, despite all of his craziness, is very much a fan of music, and I think that that maybe is his protest, because there's bands like Rush and Kiss and Judas motherfucking Priest who are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they certainly were bands that laid the groundwork for a band like Guns N' Roses, and maybe he just feels it's disrespect, or maybe it's just a political thing. You never know with Axl, but he ain't going to be in Cleveland, Ohio at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Another big news in metal is Pantera releasing the unreleased track from the Vulgar Display of Power recordings, Piss. Going to have that for you here in just a couple of moments. Very exclusive, courtesy of YouTube, which the band has put out officially on YouTube, a video. This was filmed with fan compilation footage that different fans have sent in and mixed it together. Of course, you're not going to get the band Pantera, a lot of differences there, but at least they were able to agree on that project being done, the remaining members. And God rest your soul, Dimebag Darrell. But that's very cool. Like, some of the riffs on Piss or definitely from Far Beyond Driven. Some of the other songs on there, some of the lyrics, but it really was its own unique song. You could tell they later reworked it into those things because it didn't make the cut on Vulgar Display. But in its own merit, just not counting that it was recycled later, it's a fucking awesome song. Can't wait for you to hear that. That's coming up in just a few moments. Just two more pieces of metal news. One being that Megadeth has stated that they are going to be playing the entire Countdown to Extinction album live on tour this summer. Very interesting because they've done that a few times before. I got to see them on the Rust in Peace reunion tour and the anniversary where they played that album all the way through. That's one of my favorite Megadeth albums, so it was awesome. Countdown is a good album. I think it's highly underrated because the production is a little bit slicker. Still a heavy fucking album. Still a really relevant record with a lot of heavy stuff on it. So I wouldn't mind catching Megadeth live to see the Countdown to Extinction album played again. Not my favorite, but a good album. And then, of course, we mentioned Marilyn Manson earlier. Hollywood superstar Johnny Depp has apparently recorded some on this new album, and he actually played live incognito with Marilyn Manson at the Golden God Awards for Revolver, and so Marilyn apparently introduced him. Well, that's pretty crazy, you know, Johnny Depp. Well, but we all want to be, son. I'm a wrestler. I'm manager guy. I want to be a rock star. You know, we all want to be. Johnny Depp's an actor. He wants to be a rock star. So, fuck, you know, we all want to be rock stars. Can't fucking blame for that. All right, well, fans, we got some tunes for you. We're going to be right back with a Muji Movie Minute. But get a load of this. Long-awaited, courtesy of YouTube, the new Pantera. I never thought that song or that those words would come out of my mouth. The new Pantera song. Piss, P-I-S-S, coming up off of the Vulgar Display of Power reissue. It was a B-side off those recordings. Had some old riffs, some new riffs you might never heard. Very cool. Check it out here on the Midnight Black Mass.
My name is Richard Lee. I'm 23 years old. It would be a great honor to be a part of this video because Pantera fucking rules, and I'm just one of those kids who's gonna die in the same town he was born in. So, enjoy.
that motherfucker sing, baby!
And we're back on the Midnight Black Mass. It is now time for the Moogee Movie Minute. And celebrating the holidays here, we have a special Friday the 13th edition of the Moogee Movie Minute. My best friend since birth, the great Moogee, has been scouring the compound for the best and the worst of horror cinema, and he brings it to you here each week on the tattooed white trash gospel of the Midnight Black Mass. My friend Moogee, how are you, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. I had a few beers earlier. That was good. And I suppose between then and midnight, no bad luck befell upon you.
No, absolutely not.
Well, then, Friday the 13th, 2012, was a success.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, the only bad luck was getting home and realizing I had no more beer. That's okay.
It's what they make the kangaroo for.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a gas station in Tennessee, if you people aren't familiar with the kangaroo. But in any event, Friday the 13th, the film franchise, it's iconic. A lot of controversy certainly surrounding the fact that they remade the film in 2009. We watched both of them. How do you want to do this one, my friend?
I guess talk about the old one, the OG first, and then the new one a little bit. I really have to go over the plot. I'm just assuming that anyone who would ever listen to the show has seen Friday the 13th, and if you haven't, then you're just an asshole. So we're not going to go over the plot a lot. Basically, just kind of talk about the franchise and stuff. You know, the original was in 1980. It was kind of admittedly by the writers of the film. They wanted to do a Halloween-esque movie, but put it out in the woods. That was their idea of their take on doing a movie like Halloween, even though, honestly, it's not all that similar, other than the fact that it's teenagers running. That's really it. But it came out in 1980. It's another one of these awesome stories where it cost them like $500,000 to make, and it made $35 million, which is awesome. It seems like almost all of my favorite horror movies were made for like very little money. It seems like when they're going to put the effort in to make things look cool, it always ends up being better. But
it's just the creativity. You know, we've discussed that with many of the horror professionals we've had here on the show as guests, and even, you know, other realms of entertainment and guests. A lot of that is a constant theme that comes back is, you know, the creativity of these older, lower-budget movies is something that modern directors really aren't, you know, they aren't faced with that, and you don't end up with things like Friday the 13th, but I digress. Continue.
Yeah, absolutely. So the old movie, it's one of those movies that, to me, when I try to compare it, I almost forget the first one sometimes when I'm thinking about the whole franchise, because at a certain point, they just started churning these out, much like they did the Nightmare on Elm Street and even some of the Halloweens. But the first one, of course, famous that, you know, Jason's only in it for the one scene at the very end of the movie. The first Friday the 13th, no Jason. Second one, he's not even having the mask, which is crazy that, you know, Jason with the hockey mask is such an iconic horror character and image. And, you know, they did two movies before he ever even got that scene. The original movie was, the things that were really good about it, obviously, were the makeup. It was Tom Savini's second big makeup gig. He'd already done Dawn of the Dead, but a lot of the stuff they did in this movie with the kills, like, you know, they never really tried before. Doing like the arrow through the head, the cutting the head off. At the time, it was much more realistic than, you know, it had been in most movies. If you watch most movies through the 70s, a lot of them in any sort of death that's, you know, anything more than just somebody getting stabbed or choked or something, you know, lots of times they cut away. And part of that, in some movies, was for artistic reasons, and some reasons because Tom Savini kind of invented a lot of the special effects that, you know, make you be able to stab somebody in the head and make it look realistic. And those still hold up pretty well. If you watch it now, obviously, special effects have come, you know, come a distance, but I wouldn't so much say a long way when it comes to horror, because actually the stuff that they did back then looks in my opinion, a lot better than a lot of the CGI does now.
Oh, yeah, the great deal of that is got to be credited to Tom Savini. I think a lot of modern makeup artists still use many of the techniques that he invented. Can't undersell Tom Savini's importance to the Friday the 13th success.
Yeah, between him and Greg Nicotero and then the other beard guy that looks like Greg Nicotero that I can't think of.
Rick Baker.
They're really, between the three of them, you know, a large percentage of special effects that you see today would be like horror movies or makeup effects. You know, they kind of put all together themselves during the late 70s through the early 80s. But like that, you know, obviously the special effects with everything, you know, it's like, you know, on the cheap budget, he made it look great. The plot for the movie is, at the time, pretty cool. You know, it had like a double twist ending kind of throughout the movie, you know, coming hot off like, you know, Halloween and all the movies that came up in the next 2 years before this movie came out. You know, I don't think anyone expected for Mrs. Voorhees to be the killer. You know, you didn't expect a woman to be the killer. Just watching and having them tell stories about Jason, you know, you kind of would assume that, you know, it would end up being him. And it ended up being...
That's something I want to say about that particular scene that you're talking about there. And that's a very, like, people, you know, we joke about these movies being kind of, you know, intentionally campy and the acting being bad. I think they did have a very good heroine in Adrienne King as Alice. She was very likable. She was very innocent. But where Mrs. Voorhees is revealing herself to be the mother of Jason, basically what I'm getting at is, you know, the same point Alice knows, that she's the killer. Like, you don't find out until she does. And that is, despite all the other cheesy acting in the movie, you know, quote unquote, that's a very brilliant piece of business right there.
Yeah, absolutely. When she pulls up in her SUV and gets out and, you know, says, you know, that she's, her name is Voorhees, right then you're like, oh, you know, she's the killer. As soon as she says her last name, you know that she is. And then that's, that was really good, because, I mean, that's something that, you know, especially in the horror genre and just movies in general, you know, it wasn't like today where almost every movie tries some sort of a twist ending and you're so programmed to know it's coming. You know, it's really, really hard to have any sort of a surprise ending now, because, you know, when we're at a horror movie now, the credit ends, you know, the movie ends, the killer's dead, you know, you wait through the credits because you know something else is going to happen, and it wasn't that way back then. I also had the double ending there, too, because you find out she's the killer, obviously she gets her head chopped off and what was, you know, like I said, for the time, a very good special effect. Then, you know, the only time you see Jason the whole movie, the girl wakes up the next day out in the rowboat, and Jason comes up from the lake. You know, you didn't see that coming back in 1980. You know, that wasn't something that happened.
Yeah, and we're desensitized to that because of exactly what you said, that every fucking horror movie under the sun has to have the the killer's not dead, he's really back and he's going to kill all of you, or at least he's going to come after you ending. And that was all probably copied from this ending here, which is the young Jason coming out of the lake. And you know, but you got to put yourself in the frame of mind going back. If I was sitting in a movie theater in 1980 and I wasn't conditioned to that, I would have shat all upon myself.
No, yeah, that part was just a total surprise. I mean, it's been done in a couple other movies. I'm not exactly the same. I'm like, it's almost even a little bit different in this one. Like, you know, Halloween, they shoot Michael Myers off and then, you know, he talks for a second, and then he runs and looks over the ledge, and he's gone. So they kind of done the, you know, you can't kill the guy. But, I mean, that was just totally, at that point, you'd heard all the stories about Jason during the movie, and then it turns out to be the old woman. You know, the thought wouldn't even cross your mind that, oh, Jason's still out there somewhere, because, you know, they hadn't made, like, you know, a billion of these movies yet. You know, as I, you know, didn't see this movie, obviously, it was out before I was born. And I saw some other movies with Jason in them before I even saw this one when I was a kid. So So, you know, you already knew all about him. So if you see any of the others first, you're going back and watch it. Like, where's Jason? Where's Jason? So maybe at the end, it's not even as big of a thing, but not having any idea who he is. Yeah, seeing that movie, you would have thought, oh, the mom did it. This movie was cool. And then, boom, there's a monster in the lake, you know? And it was great. And it just ends, you know? It was great. It's crazy when they talk about, you know, they had no plans of making any sort of a sequel or anything like that back when they made this movie. But that was one of the best setups for a sequel, you know, in any horror movie, because you didn't see the monster until the last 10 seconds of the movie. So the next movie, you want to see, like, well, what's he doing? What's his deal?
Yeah, it was fucking epic. I mean, I got a lot of love for that, and just going back and watching it again for the first time in a long time. I've seen this movie. God, I've seen the original Friday the 13th so many times between the ages of like 10 and 16 that, you know, I probably haven't watched it since then. And just a real treat going back and watching the original one again.
Yeah, I actually didn't see that one, the original one, all the way through until I was probably in high school. I bought it on VHS. I'd seen a bunch of the other ones. But I remember, you know, you don't have the same appreciation for movies as you did back then. And I remember being like a kid when I was going to rent those movies, you know, people would, oh, Jason's not in that one. Don't get that one. You know, like, so that I saw that then. And then, yeah, of course, it came out on DVD. And then when the new one came out, I watched it in preparation. But it had been since the remake came out that I'd seen it, which we'll pop over to that. I think that's that. You know, and another thing on that one, the original one, it was pretty important, like, I don't know if it's good or bad. I know as soon as Halloween came out, they started making tons of movies trying to copy it. Some of them cool, some of them really awful. Friday the 13th really kicked it up to another notch because they started making tons and tons and tons. And not even just we're going to make like a slasher movie. They didn't do what Friday the 13th did. Was like, okay, we're going to take this premise, put it in a different location, do our own thing, make it, you know, original. You know, there were just a billion Camping Out in the Woods movies after this came out, which shows you how successful and what, you know, and how much it affected the culture of making movies, that they were just like, yeah, we'll make our own Camping in the Woods movie.
No, I mean, Sleepaway Camp was a direct, you know, homage or ripoff, however you want to look at it, to Friday the 13th. You know, plenty of other movies. Now, it also did spawn a series of really awesome slasher films in the States and Canada. But, you know, there was, for every awesome one there's probably 10 shitty ones, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, we'll go to the remake, which was from 2009, so already 3 years ago.
Whoa. Before you get to the remake, you're going to give the rating here, or are you going to do it all said and done?
Oh, I'm going to give the rating here. I give the original one. Yeah, I'll talk about why I give the rating real quick. I think it's obviously a really important horror movie. I think it's really good. I really like it. I actually, watching it just again the other night, like without watching it for so long and kind of holding my opinion, I actually like it better than I probably did, you know, before 3 days ago. I appreciate it a little more after watching it again and watching it all the way through. Having said that, I think it's good, but I don't rate it as high as, like, the really classic. Like, I would almost say that, like, The Exorcist, Psycho, Halloween, like, those are, like, certain films are really, like, kind of like pieces of art for film. And those movies are really in that genre where I just think that they're just so, you know, almost perfectly done that I consider them, you know, artistic. Like, you know, if you watch this movie, you know, it's that good. But for Friday the 13th, I think it's that good, but I like it a lot. I gave Friday the 13th 80% well done, the original.
80% well done for the debut of a young Kevin Bacon in the 1980.
Yeah. For the Friday debut of Bacon, yes.
All right, well, there's the original. Now let's move on to the remake of 2009.
All right, yeah, the 2009 one is actually... They did pretty much exactly what you want to do in a remake. Like, out of all the remakes, you know, I think we agree that Rob Zombie's Halloween was probably the best because he really added to the Halloween story, added to the mythology. which all of you wouldn't like, but I think a lot of people were crazy and, you know, gave Michael Myers a backstory, which he really didn't need, and really made his own version of Michael Myers. You know, they're just different. You know, he gave him a backstory. I view those two movies just totally separate. I'm not like, well, now this is, you know, you don't watch the new Rob Zombie Halloween and go watch all the other sequels in the spot, but he did, you know, way more with a remake than, you know, anybody would ask. And then this Friday the 13th, though, I would say that just for, you know, if you're just remaking a movie for a new generation, not trying to add anything to it, you know, just trying to tell a Jason story, but also kind of acclimate, you know, all of the people who, you know, aren't old enough, maybe haven't seen the old Friday the 13th, then, you know, it was, you know, they had a pretty perfect formula for it, you know, compared to where, you know, they, a lot of movies are kind of confused, like the newest, the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street, it seemed like they were like, they were trying to like stay true to the original one, but also like redefine it with its like darkness and stuff, and it just, you know, I liked it, but I didn't love it. Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake was just kind of bad. This movie kind of was the, you know, exactly what you would expect for a remake, you know, something that old fans could watch and, you know, immediately, you know, like, and the new people could watch and catch up on the story. The first, you know, few minutes of the story, they kind of update you on Friday the 13th, you know, part one, the old original, because this one, you know, the new one only has Mrs. Voorhees in it for the opening scene. You basically get to see the, actually, kind of the end of the original Friday the 13th. She quickly tells the story of, like, why, you know, Jason, about Jason drowning and his whole backstory. And then, you know, it shows you, then, you know, when Jason first pops up, he's got the potato sack on his head, like he does in Friday the 13th Part 2, and then he picks up the hockey mask, which is in Part 3. So they kind of give you all of that and catch you up to current Jason within, you know, the first 20 to 25 minutes of this movie, which I thought was good. And
yeah, I'd agree.
They didn't really, like, they didn't, you know, this movie, they didn't add to, like, to Jason, like, the, to, like, you know, his story or anything, but they basically just went and made what I thought was, you know, better than any of the Friday the 13th sequels. They just gave you a good Jason movie. You know, Jason's out in the woods. There's a bunch of kids out in the woods. He doesn't fucking want them in the woods, so he goes through killing them. All the kills in the movie were really fun. They were all good. You know, they all hit some original stuff. He had where he threw the machete with the kid running away from him, which was a cool scene. He got the girl and had a cool, you know, what I thought was a cool kill scene where he throws the girl in the sleeping bag and ties that up on a tree and sets her on fire, which was, you know, a pretty original Jason kill. Yeah.
That was very original and very brutal kill there.
All the kills were brutal. It certainly still had the camp for Jason. All the Jason movies had, you know, I thought the kids in it, the Asian kid, and then the his buddy, the black gentleman.
They had all the appropriate stereotypes.
Yes, you know, they were kind of like nerdy and weird, you know, like Jason movies have always been known for that, where, you know, there's always a couple of like kind of weird people in there that get themselves killed. They're just kind of out there for the ride. It wasn't, you know, you weren't like, you know, passionately hoping that, you know, the hero and heroine made it. Well, they did do that. They gave you a backstory. Like, they tried. You know, you had the guy whose, you know, his sister gets kidnapped in the opening kills, and he's looking for her, and, you know, he's going around posting up, you know, pictures of her because his sister's disappeared, and he was, at least, you know, they made like an attempt at somebody to care about. You know, him, the girl who, you know, kind of saw his way, you know, you didn't want to get killed. So they did that. You know, it wasn't like a, oh, my God, I hope they don't get killed. But it was, you know, they gave you some feeling for them, which most horror movies now don't. That was cool. It had the appropriate amount of boobs in it, which you expect from all the Friday the 13th movies. Like I said, the kills were good. The action was good. There was stupid, jokey stuff in it throughout. Though, you know, I really liked
some of the lines where he was boning that chick, where the, like, you know, the rich, the douchebag fucking dickhead kid, the blonde guy, He's like, you know, going to town with this girl, and he's like the lies that are coming out. First of all, he's like, oh, your tits are stupendous.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, your tits are so fucking juicy, dude.
it was good, yeah. And then he says that her tits would win in a titty contest, so it was some good stuff.
I mean, you know, terribly fucking juvenile, sure, but fucking hilarious to me.
Yes, but exactly what you're looking for in one of these type of movies. You know, absolutely. I thought, you know, it was good. I thought that it's really like, you know, when you look at it and you look at almost all of the slasher movies that have come out in the past few years, almost like the past 20, from the 90s till now, you know, this was better than most of those. You know, they put the formula together right when they had to, you know, kind of use Jason for a remake, but like, this is a movie that, when I sat back and kind of think I like, if Jason wouldn't have been the killer, and it would have been some sort of new, you know, whatever, some dude or whatever the killer is, you know, I would have liked it. You know, they had the good balance between the humor, the sexuality, and, you know, the story. They gave you, you know, enough of a story to where you kind of, like, oh, you know, you couldn't wait for the douchebag guy to get killed, but you wanted the other guy to find his sister and get away. And that's what, you know, you want these slasher movies for sure.
Yeah, the only gripes I had with it, like, they had to throw the sister in there, obviously, as a plot device, but it made no fucking sense why he'd kept her alive and just slaughtered everyone else. But sure, you know.
It was because, it was like a small attempt at it, but it was because he looked like either her sister or her mom. Remember, they find the locket when they're out in the woods, they find the locket in Jason's house that I believe is a picture of Jason's mom and him when he's like a little kid. And her boyfriend, you know, is like, oh, you know, it kind of looks like you should keep it. So, you know, she's wearing the locket when Jason, like, you know, goes and gets aggressive with her. He looks at the locket and stops. I think that was like that was like a subtle, which it shouldn't be subtle if you're assuming people haven't seen the original or the part two, but it was like a kind of a subtle, you know, go to that. Like, oh, you know, it kind of looks like your mom, so, or part three, you know, it looks like your mom, so it's not going to kill her, like in the old movies, you know, the old trick people would pull on Jason. But they didn't do much in explaining. And they also, yeah, she also was just living down there for months, so. They didn't do much. She kind of looked the same. She didn't look rough for the wear, you know. Like who knows how she was eating and stuff. She looked fine and healthy and was trapped down in this dungeon for 6 months. And, of course, you know, we both agree the end, they had to go with just the standard, you know, they kill Jason, go out, and he has to pop up out of the lake to end the movie because, you know, that's just what people do in movies now, which is really obvious and you just know it's coming. It doesn't really have any effect, but you just know it's coming. It's basically for the point so they can play like a Disturbed song before they go to the credits. You gotta have something. You gotta have something to get your heartbeat up. So go ah, and then go into a song.
So final thoughts on the 2009. What did you like? What did you not like? I think you've discussed what you liked.
Yeah, I mean that was it. Pretty much like the only things I didn't like, you know, the end of the movie, you know, I thought was kind of obvious, like you said, that, you know, I mean, it wasn't deep. I mean, I think you could have made a better Jason movie, but this was certainly very good. I mean, they certainly could have added, you know, a little bit to the plot. They definitely could have made it.
The thing that I liked a lot that I didn't mention was that the underground shit, you know, the kind of attempting to explain how, you know, he's like run from Jason and fall down and you look up and he's in front of you, like, you know, it reveals he's got like a fucking underground cavern and shit and he can fucking get you that way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's got the whole underground. He had some booby traps set up where, you know, he could hear people, like when they would run, they would like ring bells, so they kind of knew where they were. So yeah, that was a good attempt at, you know, yeah, definitely explaining how you can run and see Jason 50 feet from behind you, then turn one corner, and there he is. He's just basically and this one, even though he's deformed, the old movies, almost like in some of the scenes when he would have his mask off and, you know, be fighting, he almost was like, you know, mentally handicapped is what they led you to believe that he was. He was just kind of a big ogre out in the woods, you know, that was this. But in this one, you know, he was certainly deformed looking, but they almost played him out like he was just, you know, a lot smarter than he was played out in the old movies. Like he was just an asshole that was like an excellent, you know, tracker and hunter that just lived out in the woods.
Yeah, he's like a survivalist and shit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I only thought about it. I went with this one. I gave the original one the 80. I went with this one. I gave it 79. I think the original just, you know, kind of taking a step back, you know, to kind of look at it and with a clear view at like some of the stuff that you kind of take for granted now. It had some more original things in it than, you know, you think of right off the top of your head. Whereas this one, I just thought, you know, it was a very good entry into the series. I would say that the original one I like I said, I give it the 80. This one the 79, and then I wouldn't give another Friday the 13th, you know, probably anything over like a 60-something. Like, I think it's a lot better. You know, it would have been definitely the best sequel to any of those, to, you know, the whole series, had it not just been a remake.
Yeah, it was enjoyable, and I agree with you, actually. I thought you might take the remake, because I know you liked it, but, you know, going and watching it again, I think it solidified for both of us that the original is just always hard to top something that catches on first, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, and magnificent edition of the Muji Movie Minute, really getting in deep into the Friday the 13th legend and lore. Won't be having a Muji Movie Minute next week. We'll be off. There will be no show, but we'll be back the following Friday. Any thoughts on what we might be watching then? You know, now we did a Hammer theme. Now we had Friday the 13th theme. We got a new theme.
I don't really have a super theme. We could. We could go with the Stephen King theme, because the newest thing that's come out, and we'll see what comes out between now and the next 2 weeks, but we still have the Stephen King's latest movie to be turned, or story to be turned into a movie. A Bag of Bones is up. We could always go with it and go with an old Stephen King movie.
Okay.
Kind of check those out. Stephen King has a billion of his stories turned into horror movies, so we definitely, I don't think we've reviewed any of them, so we could go on a little run of doing a few of his films and kind of comparing and contrasting those.
Hell yeah, man, that'll work with me. We'll delve into the dark and twisted mind of Stephen King on the Muji Movie Minute when we return in 2 weeks. So, brother, I will see you around. Thank you for calling, as always, my man, and you hold it down, the great Muji.
See ya.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the Muji Movie Minute. We have more show to go. We got TV Casualty and the comic book news to round out the hour. But right now, we got a little bit of music in your face. A little Behemoth with the Left Hand of God.
Careful, don't make fear. The earth is filled with fear. Wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Super villain. That's exactly what happened in this edition. Absolutely one of the all-time greatest Batman the Animated Series episodes, and I cannot say that enough, and that's really all I have to say about it. I know you're probably hoping for some great lamentation, but I've given you my thoughts, and I don't want to spoil too much more, so check that out. Heart of Ice, the greatest Batman Animated Series episode ever made. And that's all for this week of TV Casualty. Going to get to some more tunage with the new Marilyn Manson song. And we also going to have some comic book news to round out the program. But off the new Marilyn Manson upcoming album, this is the first single off of that. The song is called No Reflection. this week's program. It is time for comic book news. First up this week, Marvel Comics is back atop the sales chart following DC's reign with the early goings of the New 52 initiative. As an event we've given lots of coverage to here on the show, we've even had one of the Marvel architects himself, Jason Aaron, one of the authors of this event. Avengers vs. X-Men has hit, and the fever is running rampant. Issue number 0 sold out, issue number 1 sold out on multiple printings. This topping the sales charge, over $200,000 in the first week. These issues made very good signs for the comic book industry when people can get the buzz going like this. And it's not something that's happened for the first time, certainly, but I think on this epic and grand of a scale is certainly unprecedented, and I'm very excited to see where the storyline's going. First two issues have been fantastic. First tie-in I read was New Avengers from last week was fantastic. They're really on a roll with this Avengers versus X-Men, and I cannot wait to see how it shakes out. You know me, I'm always a man that's been hated and feared by people because they didn't understand me, much like the mutants. So I've got a side with Scott Summers and his team, the Extinction Team of X-Men out on the mutant island of Utopia. I'm with the X-Men, but you might be with the Avengers. Who knows? Certainly make your presence known. Make your thoughts felt. Come on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/midnightblackmass and let us know who you support in this massive war of superhero icons. Walking Dead, the Image comic that has taken the world by storm over the last year or so, will be turning 100. That's right, in just the next couple months. Issue 100 will be out. Hard to believe that they've been going this long, but it's also hard to believe, as I've said many times on here, that a little black and white comic turned into such a major media phenomenon with a television show, action figures, video games. They've really ran the gamut of licensing and really turned Walking Dead into a majorly profitable entity, and without sacrificing a damn bit of the quality, in my opinion. And speaking of Walking Dead, its creator, Robert Kirkman, riding the coattails a little bit. I love Robert Kirkman's work. Thief of Thieves, which is a new comic he's written, actually, I checked out the first issue, and it wasn't up my alley. I'm sure it's going to be great, because Kirkman is a fantastic writer, so I'm sure as it develops, it will be a fantastic story, but I just don't have a lot of interest in art thieves, I guess, and so, you know, you're jumping the hurdle to hook me right off the bat. But regardless, who gives a fuck about impressing me, because the Impressed AMC Network, and they have already optioned in 3 issues. Now, the 3rd issue of this comic just hit the stands this month, or is hitting the stands this month. 3 issues in, and this Thief of Thieves series has already been optioned by AMC for a television show. So Robert Kirkman really got the Midas touch right now when it comes to anything that he's touching. And speaking of the visual medium translated, Sin City, which was a great comic translation, often overlooked because it's not of the major 2 Marvel or DC entities, but very popular in its own right, of course, written by the legendary Frank Miller. And now finally, Sin City 2, the sequel to that movie, has been announced, and that's going to be going into production really soon. So very excited to see that. Loved the original Sin City and cannot wait to see what they do with the sequel. Says there's so many more stories that Frank Miller had written in that Sin City universe they can really pick from. That's really going to be outstanding. Amazing Spider-Man, of course, coming to theaters this July. Has been touted now as a complete reboot of the franchise, which we already know, but not to what extent until now. Director Mark Webb has stated that the origin of Spider-Man is to play out over the series of several films, which I really like that idea I think they're going with it, because you've got a chance to just completely recreate the cinematic universe of Spider-Man. We already know that Norman Osborn and Oscorp are going to be an entity in this first movie. Now, we know they're probably not going to have much involvement, because obviously the Lizard is going to be the focus of this new amazing Spider-Man movie. But the fact that that's there, Gwen Stacy is there, you can really see where they're going, and I'm not going to drop the spoilers, but, you know, if you're a Spider-Man fan of many years, I think I know exactly where that film franchise is going, and, oh, man, if they keep it up, they really got some legendary stuff on their hands here, so highly, highly anticipating the July release of Amazing Spider-Man coming to theaters everywhere. DC Direct, long-time action figure collectible merchandising line. That DC Comics has used to sell direct to retailers, things that, you know, you can't just go to Walmart and buy. They're not mass-produced. These are rare collectible figurines, props, what have you, that they only make a limited number of, and that is now going away, at least in name. So DC Direct has been shut down. They will be relaunched under DC Collectibles, and not a lot of details on what the difference is going to be, but part of DC Comics rebranding initiative, and they're getting out there and doing it. They got the new 52. They have the Saturday morning cartoon lineup on Cartoon Network. Got nice Green Lantern toys in the McDonald's right now. You can go, and I got a Kilowog this week. It's pretty badass. He's got a construct fist on his hand to punch out some poosers. And there was some Hal Jordan, some other cool things. So DC Comics really trying to get themselves out there. And that's good for everybody who loves comic books. Of course, the big day coming up real soon, my most anticipated movie of the summer, going to be Avengers on May the 6th. Love Spider-Man, love Batman. Probably even more so than the Avengers as a whole, but just the fact that they're doing this, that they're actually going to fucking pull this off, is unheralded. As a comic book fan, something I've been waiting my whole life to see, something of this magnitude, and Captain America would go up there in all of the all-time favorite characters for me. So, God, just so excited, like a kid in a candy store. I haven't been this excited for a movie in many, many years, and I've tried to avoid many of the trailers. I've seen a couple. They keep releasing more and more scenes, and I don't want to see that. I want to see it all in the theater. It's kind of a gripe I have. They give away too much in the trailers now. Do you feel the same way, congregation? I hope you do. But if you don't, that's your fucking... Maybe you like to see most of the movie in the trailer. And if that floats your boat, then I'm not going to be the man to stop it. But me, personally, just give me a little bit. The trailers of the 70s and 80s were masterfully done because they gave us the art of the tease. It was the sell, man. You had to sell it, get the people's asses in the seats, and they don't like everything else. They just want to give it all away, but whatever. In any event, Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, speaking of the Avengers, that's the animated version. Their cartoon counterparts on Disney XD have returned. Two episodes in, been fantastic. We've seen Dr. Doom already, seen the return of AIM. We've seen the Skrulls invading and a whole lot more hijinks being set up for later in this season. It looks like the Kree-Skrull War is going down this season. Looks like some famous storylines. In addition, maybe even the Winter Soldier going down this season on that cartoon. So definitely want to make that a priority. And I got to say, Ultimate Spider-Man is the other show on that Disney block, and that's a Sunday morning cartoon lineup. Ultimate Spider-Man was portrayed as being marketed towards kids, so they gave me a free comic book a couple weeks ago when I went and picked up my stash, and it was a preview of the first episode in comic book form, and, you know, very geared towards the younger audience, but I gotta say, watching it, really did an outstanding job with that show. The humor is good. It is an all-ages show, but not so much that it's unbearable. I mean, his story still makes sense. It just takes that universal appeal of Spider-Man and spreads it out. It gets a little silly, but the way they do it are like sidebars, like, you know, what's going on in Peter's head and different things like that. So it's never like any of the silly Japanime dances and things that you see on there. I saw the preview, and I was like, what the fuck is this? This is going to be garbage. No, you know, it's not, because it's just that, you know, Peter, something crazy happens, he has a little daydream thing where he goes off, and it's just, you know, it's all done totally tongue-in-cheek, totally playing to the comic book fan. I mean, you can't fucking beat a cartoon that has a Paste Pot Pete reference, okay? So Ultimate Spider-Man gives the highest recommendation possible for the cartoon. I've enjoyed it as much as Avengers, and that's saying a lot because I love that. That Avengers cartoon may be next. I mean, it stands up right there with Batman the Animated Series as the best cartoon ever made. So get up with your kids in the morning. Watch some Disney XD on Sunday. Tomorrow, watch Cartoon Network. Get the comic book vibe in with your youngins and can bond on that because that's, you know, heroism, doing the right thing in the face of adversity, being misunderstood, having more power on your shoulders than you can handle. That's sometimes something that maybe we've all dealt with in life, and those are good principles, whether you be an adult or a kid, to live by. You know, I want my daughter to learn the principles of these comic book characters and heroes because, you know, they have a moral code, and it's not like a politician's moral code to shove shit down your throat. It's about doing the right thing at the right time when it counts and being somebody. And I don't think those life lessons are bad to learn. I think they're actually universal and they transcend any medium of entertainment. And you're not going to find it more well done than in those two series. So definitely want to check that out. And thank you again for joining us. The reader or listenership, rather, has spiked up tremendously in the last few weeks. I'm not sure what to attribute that to. But thank you all for your feedback and your comments, your criticisms. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to my soothing tones here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. But I'm going to get in bed. I got a very important and long drive tomorrow to Cornelia, Georgia, to set some things straight on NWA Anarchy. And the cameras are going to be rolling, so fans, you can watch it on TV. I assure you, you can follow me on Twitter and get up-to-date information at Dragons Rejects. That's Dragons and the possessive, as Dan the Dragon Wilson. Rejects as in the Devil's Rejects. Dragons Rejects. That's on Twitter. You can follow me there. You can go to our official Facebook page at facebook.com/MidnightBlackMass. And end the show this week with a little acid bath. I mentioned them earlier, a cult followed band from Louisiana that other members went on to success. It's a little rumor mill that those guys might be getting back together. Nothing official. But just in case there might be any truth to it whatsoever, I wanted you to hear what you might be in store for or what you're missing if it don't happen. So again, thank you. Drink a cold beer. Smoke if you got 'em. Keep one foot in the gutter and one fist in the gold. This is the Reverend, and I'm out. I'll see y'all tomorrow night in Cornelia, Georgia. Temple supply.
for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.